we are aware that some of the conditions of the name, when made with the intention of making sure that the personnel is further able to contribute. So we appreciate the endeavors from those in the mission without not necessarily coming to the implementation. But at the same time, we take our heads off for all those who make submissions and make sure that they have to fly down to Cape Town and their headquarters and come share with us experiences and opinions and ideas, suggestions and recommendations on how we can deal with any problem in the quality of life for South African veterans. So we appreciate your effort and appreciate your time. And we thank you also for all the efforts and the time. Honorable members and guests, some of our colleagues are not present here, most in particular from the HCOC, because they are faced with the process of view. So most of the members who are here are members from the HCOC. And our program will be presented very shortly. It seems like the printers are taking their time, but very shortly we'll be able to present the program to you. Now, without any waste of time, we will call upon Mr. Ntandazo Qhinga. Mr. Ntandazo Qhinga. Do we have Mr. Ntandazo Qhinga?
Sorry that I didn't get your name, but morning to everybody. And I want to thank this wonderful opportunity.
Okay, sir. I think you're correct. That's what we should have done, was to make sure that we introduce the people who are here, and you also introduce ourselves. Okay. You're correct.
Can I start?
Yes, you can start.
Okay. My name is Ntandazo Qhinga. In and out, they call me GD because it's much easier that way, you know, to call my name. But basically, I just want to explain more about myself. Yes, I'm a military veteran. But at the moment, I'm in the venture of a foreign business.
Okay, Chief, in introducing yourself, you only say the name, just the name and where you come from.
Okay.
In terms of the structure that you present, that is
okay.
All.
Okay.
Otherwise, you take the whole thing.
Yeah, like I said, my name is Ntandazo Qhinga. I'm coming from the company called GD The Productions. Yes, I'm a military veteran as well.
Thank you. Yeah, can we start from that and come this side and then go back? Right at the back, yeah. Next to KB. Yeah, the first one next to KB, then you come this one. Thank you. Just for that.
My name is Mahasin Choli, MKMVA Gauteng. If we can, then just go to our purposes to accommodate us any day
can allow members to sneak out from our meetings when we are present. But we're going to request the following committee to slot in one day next week where we're going to observe. If that is fine with my colleague, I can now address the that we're a bit embarrassed as the committee parliament of the second that was seen unfolding in our judicial at second, it's all pushing the second, I don't know how to describe it, and how judges are going through each other's throat in public. And when we do that as members, they're saying we're undermining it. I don't have to do that themselves, it's fine. It's so embarrassing. Yeah, but I think someone from that office has kind of put the thing. What is this second about? Why don't we use this as some of the claims that are made that this is owned now by the first two judges? Just now, we're not going to make any sense to the office. The three are insisting that they are going to pursue the letter anyway. That's the second that the lady should be taking us from that dinner or so. Now, to the department, I don't have to open this for debate, I know members. If I open this for debate, discussion, but not now, right. We are going to receive a briefing about that day. Jurisdiction of the court amendment. At the same time, we're going to get a briefing from the Ministerial Commission about the two magistrates. Is it two or one? Because I got a call from the office of the minister. So the request from the rep from the Ministerial Commission that why can't they do this both cases? One. That will be today, even if the magistrate the out. Because for them looking at today, they to take over for the same subject. But if one magistrate tomorrow, this might not be good in terms of time. Unless I have expenses for them staying in our cell or anything, doing and flying out. But that will depend on how the colleagues were going to entertain those briefings today, and about the fee. Let me check with the department as to whether you have some bilateral discussions before we start, as to whether you will receive a briefing from about the bill first or about the ministry. And the committee will be flexible, but let me hear from the bilateral that we had. The department as well. I want to pick while the bill is negotiating, colleagues, is there anything else to raise before the department talks about the other steps in terms of the briefing and the bill? Yeah, there are
more thank you very much. I think we are doing it with the money Tuesday, Wednesday, in the process. Then I think it will be better after that, because we'll be getting other things, the report from problems. Why is that going to present the topic and the mother? I think the other important thing is about, to me, I think the 2020 should be better, but the other thing that we talked about, what should we say? I think I agree with you that probably it would be good that the department looks at the issue of our high cost of rent. So people raise the view of the public rent, and you don't know it, you can't even answer the issue. So I'm afraid of the issue. And I don't think much there for not to the issue of the negotiation. I would agree with you there.
Okay.
Yeah, no, of course that would be very interesting to hear, but I think it might be a little bit premature if we push from our side now until they have not discussed it, not had thought they being out properly. So I would think that it might be more prudent to wait a little bit longer before we ask for briefing from that.
So, Mr. Chairperson, I would like to second Honorable Shimela. We don't want to hear the decision, but we want to hear the process. What are they doing? Because we are hearing this thing from the newspaper. And as the committee relevant, if people are asking you, what is this? Now you don't know. I think they have to brief us the processes, what has taken place, where are we now, what is going to happen. Not to give us decisions, how are they going to decide, but just to brief us on the processes and of the matter. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much, colleagues. We can delay this any further. As Colleague Price said, the only thing that when you are confronted by people who know that they are telling them, they expect to live in other people who are there. Because as the writer said, we don't want the merit and the conflict may be there. Otherwise, it's going to be like that. Go for each other if I feel like that. Yeah, that is, you can read our message that we need to be telling for the state that you want to come on the we'll await the response to when the parties can talk about it. If you also to ask in a closed meeting, by all means, we'll do that.
I agree with you. Okay, difficulty is that part of this actually out of the part of the process between the constitutional court and the judicial services. So the problem is not very 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 much of the government institution. I can give you indication of what I've seen that if you from the office in the place what the issue is in the procedural. The commission, the judicial service commission, received a complaint from the judges of the constitutional court down to the 21st of May in that area, and the commission then decided to meet on the appeal of the commission for the 21st of May. To meet an urgent meeting, they went to the airport in Johannesburg, and they then decided how the procedures would go. They had to send the judges of the constitutional court, either as an individual or as a collector, should make the proper representations to the commission and put their complaint before the commission in detail before the particular date. Then the opportunity to respond to that complaint in writing to the commission before the particular date. And then again, the constitutional court will have the right to again put answer to that document from that floppy also before a certain date. And then those three submissions will be reconsidered by the commission, will be considered by the commission on the 5th of July. And then they meet. And then we'll take the proceedings there. Now, I suppose the procedure will be that they will then decide, if they can decide on their name, decide whether how to investigate the process, because the commission should investigate. And when they are satisfied that there is there's probably nothing to the case against the just stop it, they will then enter into an inquiry. That inquiry will then lead to a recommendation as to the impeachment or not. And if they decide on meeting the court, then by the court department, it's going to have to decide which issue. And then the question.
Yes, thank yeah. No, we'll talk about it later. But the same for it's not about the question. The interesting part is that those complainants now say no, they are not complainants. They don't complain if they don't complain. Yeah, that was a fundamental break. Let's hear now
the
question. Welcome,
Robin. Thank you very much, Jay. Thank you. Sorry, I'm late. My apologies.
Can we hear the outcome of the Valentine?
Thank you. The indication is that the term is going to end with the on the vote. I'm completely in your hands, of course, like medicine.
Okay, no, we should check by that time. Welcome, doctor. We will check by that time. Welcome to Dr. Panyata. To receive a briefing from the department about the jurisdiction of this financial game. Let me apologize for this, that it is an ugly game. I don't understand my target the top manager. I don't understand the top manager. The senior person in front of the team, and the one that won is really about the automotive. But from tomorrow onwards, I promise for the team, I only give the chance to get the nice thing. Right? I think you like that. Yeah, and I'll talk in a little time and over to Mr. DeLange to tell us through the team.
Thanks very much, Chair. I've prepared a concise PowerPoint presentation. Earlier, every member should have also distributed a copy of that presentation, and then we should have it for them. So, I'll try and keep it as brief and concise as possible, but please feel free to interrupt or if at any stage you'd like me to elaborate on any matter. Just as a bit of background first, Chair, I want to draw attention to the fact, as we did in the National Assembly, that we're dealing with a very old act. The principal act is the Magistrates Court Act 32 of 1944. So you can see it's been coming with us for a long while. Since it was passed in 1944, it's been amended no less than 64 times to date. This will probably be the end of the 65th amending bill. The only reason I'm mentioning that is It is rather challenging if you look at amending this piece of legislation, the way it's been drafted, the whole structure of the bill, or of the act rather, is such that it is very difficult to do our modern changes in what we require from the act to adapt it to our needs now. And I'm mentioning this because this bill that we're introducing must be seen as an interim measure. It's very clear that it is. The act is way past its sell by date. If you look at the terminology being used, as I've said, the structure, the district, sub-district, everything around it is crying out for revision, and we will definitely be engaging on a process of not even rationalizing, we will probably rewrite it to become a lower court act, and in that process make some major policy decisions as to whether we want a formal family court, for example. Do we still want district courts? Do we want to limit jurisdiction? Or do we want to create specific district courts for civil jurisdiction, criminal jurisdiction, all those things? But I'm just mentioning it so that should be borne in mind. The very relevant part of this principal act is, of course, Section 2 And I'm mentioning this just to give a bit of background on the way the courts are structured in the lower courts at the moment. Section 2 deals with all the powers of the minister, their relative to magistrates, districts, and magistrates' courts. And in terms of this section, the minister can divide or must divide the country into magistrates' districts. She must define the local limits of each district, which may consist of various non-contiguous areas to clear the name by which any district may be known, and the like. She can also, by notice in the Gazette, create regional divisions consisting of a number of districts or of a district together with one or more sub-districts and declare the name by which any regional division must be known. And she can increase, decrease the local limits of any district, the same with regional divisions. She can annex portions of districts to each other. She can establish a court for districts. Now that is the ordinary magistrate's court that people are always referring to, the district court. And then can establish courts for regional divisions for purpose of criminal trials. This is the first interesting feature we note here. When it comes to the establishing for courts for districts, there's no distinction that it's for criminal or civil work. It just says that the minister can establish courts for districts. But when it comes to regional divisions, it's being established for purpose, courts for purpose of criminal trials. And the Act, this regional divisions, this provision was in fact introduced in 1952 to make provision for the establishment of regional courts, and as I just said, only for criminal trials. The other relevant part of this bill relates to divorce matters. I think everyone is acquainted with the old divorce court that was established under Act 9 of 1929, the old Administration Act. It is really the old, it used to be the Black Administration Act, Amendment Act 9 of 29. Now this was amended in 1997. The name was changed firstly to the Administration Amendment Act 9 of 29, and the decision at the time before this Parliament, or Parliament at the time, was whether to abolish those courts, being a remnant of the old Black Administration Act, or whether to retain the services offered by those courts and just simply to racialize the court. And quite clearly that was the route taken, in that the courts were open for all races. It was felt that they do provide a very essential service, in that it enhances access to justice, that all those people that formerly could have made use of the divorce court can still continue to do so, not needing to go to the High Court in respect of divorces. And of course, since the deracialization of the court in 1997, the workload of those courts increased, since people of all races now, and especially in undefended, uncontested divorce cases, prefer to use the facilities of these courts as opposed to that to the High Court with the associated costs and complications involved. You can gather probably that this deracialization in 97 does not alter the historic fact that they were established in terms of the ideology of apartheid separately from the structure of the mainstream lower court, which is of course the magistrate's court. The jurisdiction of the divorce courts, presently they have jurisdiction to hear and determine suits relating to nullity of a marriage and divorce, and to decide upon any question arising therefrom, and to hear any matter and grant any order provided for in terms of the Recognition of Customary Marriages Act, 98. They have exactly the same jurisdiction as any high court in relation to these matters. In other words, they've got concurrent law, high court, or they have concurrent jurisdiction. And we have got three divorce courts in the country, but they're all circuit courts throughout the country. They really cover the whole of the territory. But you can imagine that administratively it is complicated, in that they do not have an office in each place in the country where there is, for example, a magistrate's office available. The object of the bill is therefore to firstly bestow extended civil jurisdiction on the regional courts for the first time, as opposed to only the criminal jurisdiction that they can exercise at the moment. And secondly, also to bestow jurisdiction in divorce and related matters on the regional courts. This means that the existing divorce courts will be integrated into the regional court. In other words, they will become part of a designated regional court. They will disappear in name, but they will continue existing as they are at the moment, and they will continue with the same jurisdiction, everything. And as we develop capacity, we will extend that divorce jurisdiction to other regional courts. I think we can just very briefly reflect on the preamble to the bill as well. It also gives fairly strong indication of what we have in mind. Since the divorce court established under Section 10 of the Administration Act have their origins based on race, and since these courts, although now open to all races, are not geographically distributed throughout the national territory, and since courts for regional divisions only deal with criminal matters, while courts for districts deal with criminal and civil matters, it is consequently the purpose of the Act, as an interim measure, pending the further rationalisation of the lower courts, to enhance access to justice by conferring jurisdiction on courts for regional divisions, which are distributed throughout the national territory, to deal with certain civil matters, including matters currently dealt with in the divorce court established under Section 10 of the Administration Amendment Act of 1929, and secondly, to promote the development of judicial expertise among the ranks of magistrates with the view to, and I see we've chopped off the last sentence there, with a view to broadening the pool of fit and proper persons qualifying appointment to the Superior Court. I want to just pause here for a while. It's a logical consequence of extending the civil jurisdiction to the regional courts that we will enhance the professional capacity of our lower courts judiciary to make them more suitable, or to broaden the pool of fit and proper persons qualifying for appointment to the Superior Court. So now those members who are familiar with the court structure, and I think many of you will know what I'm talking about, will know that we've had the situation up till now that you enter your career as a legal officer, as a presiding officer in the bench of the magistrate's court, the district court, where you can exercise civil jurisdiction and criminal jurisdiction. If you've got ambition to be elevated to a more senior level, the next senior level would be the regional court. But regional courts only exercise criminal jurisdiction. The magistrates tend to focus on criminal work. The civil adjudication aspect has always been a bit of a stepchild in our lower court system. If you aspire to promotion, you need it to get elevated to the regional court. So magistrates, that's the only route that could be, the only route that could follow. By elevating or by extending civil jurisdiction to the regional court, it means that we can now actually draw those very good civil magistrates and magistrates with ambition in civil work to also apply their skills in the regional court, and also in that manner to develop their expertise in civil adjudication and make you more suitable for appointment to the High Court, of course, which there is no distinction in the High Court. They exercise jurisdiction civil and criminal. Then turning to the provisions of the self-chair, clause 1 is a very simple clause. I'm not going to waste too much time there. There's simply a definition being changed, the definition of court. At the moment it says any court means a magistrate's court. We add in for any district or for any regional division. The reason being that there is some confusion, because this Act refers to court as a magistrate's court, where the magistrate's court would always include a regional court, or would it also include a district court? This will just increase that legal clarity. As I said, it's an archaic Act. You will notice, for example, that never in the Act itself is the word district court used, and the word regional court is never used in the principal Act itself. It refers to a district and a court of a district, and a regional division and a court of a regional division. That's why I say we really need to overhaul the whole thing to make it more intelligible. But that is clause 1. Clause 2, a very important clause, that's the one that I referred to earlier. It also amends Section 2 of the Magistrates Court Act, that is the section dealing with all the minister's powers relative to districts, regional divisions, and courts. And this is really the operational clause where the big things are happening. Firstly, there's a small amendment. Well, the first amendment that we're referring to in Clause 2 is the new 21E capital A, saying that the minister can annex regional divisions or portions of regional divisions to other regional divisions. The minister has the same power in respect of districts. We just want to extend that power now to regional divisions. The reason being that, and you will see that this will be a recurring theme in the bill, we want to aim very strongly at facilitating an incremental approach to the implementation of the legislation. One way of putting it is perhaps by referring to having to apply, if you want to erect a building, before that you have an architect draw up the plans and you've got to get official approval for the plan, and then you can start with a building. Now this bill, as we foresee, will work very much in the same way. When the bill is passed and signed, it will not change the situation within 24 hours, because it is really a massive change. What we need by passing the bill is just the empowering provision to go ahead with the rollout. But the bill or the act, when it is passed, will not change things overnight. The only thing that will change immediately is that your divorce court will become integrated with the regional court. But as I pointed out already, they will still exist, they will still carry on performing the same functions, they will have the same areas of jurisdiction. The only real change is they will now be merged with a specific regional court, and they will form part of that regional court. Then as we develop the capacity, we will appoint more regional court magistrates to make sure that we do not give people civil jurisdiction if they are battling with backlogs in criminal cases, for example. We will never follow that rule. Also, of course, you need courthouses, those kind of things. But in order to budget for that, in order to plan for that, you need empowering legislation. I think I don't need to inform members, they know that is the way budgets work, etc. They always ask you, where's the legislation authorizing you to do this, and then you can budget and you can roll out. My colleague, J.B. Scorsano, incidentally asked me to apologize for you. He's had some logistical problems. He would have been there by now, but I've spoken to him a while ago. He was still at Johannesburg Airport. He would dearly like an opportunity to also address the committee on the planning that's already been done in this regard, the budget that's already been approved in this regard, or that's been anticipated in this regard. We will give you a lot of more details regarding, I think that's already targeted, but targeted something like the 60 regional court magistrates, but to that guidance before once this legislation is approved, but there's quite a big initiative on the go as far as that is concerned. But I'm sorry for taking a bit of time there, but that is just to explain this very small amendment that you need a provision saying that the minister can annex four parts of regional provisions to each other. Then a more small thing, the dual nature of district court is just confirmed to specify in 218 the minister can establish a court for any district, that's the existing provision. You're adding four purposes of one file of persons accused of sentence to adjudicating civil disputes contemplated in 29.1. But that won't change anything. The existing law is just creating that distinction to make it easier for the next amendment that we introduce for the regional court, which is that the minister can appoint places for sittings of civil regional court and define the territorial limits of those places. And the minister obviously can also appoint regional courts for the purpose of criminal trials, as is the position at the moment. Then we add adjudicating civil disputes contemplated in Section 29.1 and 29.1b. That is the ordinary civil matters, 29.1, 29.1b, which is divorce jurisdiction, which is just really taken over from the divorce court, which is exactly the same provision, and we're just writing it to this act now. Turning to Clause 3 here, there's a small amendment to Section 9 of the Magistrates Court Act. We're just omitting 9.1c, which says that a magistrate of a regional division may also be the magistrate of a district and shall, for the purposes of Section 12.5, be deemed to have been duly appointed as an additional magistrate for each district, except the district of which he is the magistrate, falling wholly or partly within the regional division of which he is a magistrate. Sounds very complicated. It underlines what I said earlier. It's not an easy act. But this provision is just being repealed because we don't need it anymore. In fact, it's never been used. So I'm not concentrate any more time on that. As I said, it's consequential, and following from that, there's also a small consequential amendment in Clause 12.5, which is just the next clause. Clause 4 amends Section 12 of the Magistrates Court Act. It's rather an important provision. The first provision that I need to draw attention to is the fact that it envisages that only regional court magistrates whose names appear on a list compiled by the Magistrates Commission may preside in civil matters. The reason being that obviously you've got a fairly extended regional court bench at the moment. Some of those presiding officers have been dealing with criminal cases now for a number of years, and that's all they've been doing. And this is firstly to ensure that before you can extend that jurisdiction, there must have been a filtering process to make sure that you are in fact sufficient process to exercise that jurisdiction as well. Now, you do have the situation where you've got magistrates holding that position at the moment who will need a bit of training or refresher courses or whatever the Magistrates Commission may deem appropriate. But you also have a situation that you might have vacancies, and you want to appoint people who the Commission has identified, very senior magistrates in the district courts who do a lot of civil work. They don't need to go on a training course or anything like that because you select them for appointment on the basis of the expertise. And the same applies to outside appointments. You might target a very well-qualified or very experienced attorney or advocate and appoint that person as a magistrate to the regional court directly for the purpose of exercising civil jurisdiction. Then the Magistrates Commission will have to keep this list, and on this list must be the names of all people, of all magistrates, who the South African Judicial Education Institute has issued a certificate that the person has attended an appropriate training course. Members will recall that we are actually in the process of finalizing that Judicial Education Institute bill. This House recently, last week, just confirmed it, and it's now been referred back to the NA. But this institute will see the light of day probably before the end of the year already. But in the meanwhile, the institute doesn't exist, so there's another possibility in that the Magistrates Commission can be satisfied that an appropriate training course was successfully completed. This is really an interim measure. Until that institute is up and running, there will be something else for the Magistrates Commission to have a look at to make sure that the person is qualified. And then lastly, the example that I've just referred to, the Magistrates Commission should be satisfied that the magistrate has sufficient experience in civil adjudication. That experience could be sufficient as a result of the magistrate presiding over the adjudication of civil disputes, or as a legal practitioner with at least 5 years experience in the administration of justice, and the Commission is satisfied that the person in question has suitable knowledge of and expertise in civil litigation matters to preside over the adjudication of the civil disputes. See, those are the important provisions of Clause 4. Turning to Clause 5, Clause 5 deals with the creation of a new post for regional courts, mainly that of Hagerstraat. That is just because the present clerks of the court are appointed at the district court level. You do not really need clerks of the court for criminal work, so the regional courts are practically functioning without clerks of the court. But when it comes to civil work, obviously you do need a registrar. In fact, our existing divorce courts already have their registrars, so we needed to create this capacity within the regional court. We've chosen the name of the registrar as opposed to clerk of the court. It's also already envisaged that at the district court level, there is also a change that's about to materialize in the not too distant future. The clerks of the court will also become registrars, and there will be certain qualifications required of them, etc., but that's just another discussion. But in the meanwhile, what we've done is we just took the provisions relating to clerks of the court, the district court, and copied it for the regional court, but we've changed the registrar and not the clerk of the court. Then also a very practical provision, any reference in a clerk to any law to clerk of the court, even so far as that law relates to a court of the regional division, deemed to be a reference to the registrar or assistant registrar of the regional division. and also that the existing clerks of the court can have a dual appointment. You can designate a clerk of the court also as a registrar or an assistant registrar to a regional division. Clause 6 is the next one. It deals with Clause 6 deals with Section 28 of the Magistrates Court Act. That section in turn deals with jurisdiction in respect of persons. Now, most of the provisions here, the first two are really just confidential. It's amendments to Section 28.1. You will see that the word for regional division is just being added in some instances. But the really important amendment starts with the new 1 capital A, subsection 1A that's been inserted. And it says that for the purposes of Section 29.1B, that is divorce jurisdiction, a court for a regional division shall have jurisdiction if the parties are, or if either of the parties is domiciled in the area of jurisdiction of the court or on the date on which proceedings are instituted, or ordinarily resident in the area of jurisdiction of the court on the said date, as or have been ordinarily resident in the Republic for a period of not less than 1 year immediately. Immediately prior to that date. Now, it sounds complicated. It's really just once again copying an existing provision that we have in respect of the divorce court in that Administration Amendment Act. It's just transferred it to the Magistrates Court Act now because we are sending that jurisdiction to the regional courts. Clause 7 deals with Section 29 of the Magistrates Court Act. That's the heading that clause, the section of jurisdiction in respect of causes of action. And once again, the First Amendment to Subsection 1 are mostly consequential. It sets out all the actions which can be taken to a magistrate's court, for example, delivery or transfer of property, ejectment against occupier of premises of land, actions for determination of the right of way, etc., etc., etc. And then there's normally a monetary value being used to limit the jurisdiction of the magistrates of the district court. Now, firstly, we using that monetary value to say that the minister can determine two monetary values so that you have distinction between civil jurisdiction in the district court and civil jurisdiction in the regional court. I have been given an understanding by Mr. Cortana that an extension of the monetary value for district courts is apparently on the card. I do not know the particulars of what amount they have in mind, but then, of course, we will need to determine an amount for regional courts as well. That is an amount that the minister determines from time to time by notice in the Gazette. Then there's a new subsection, 1 capital B being inserted, jurisdiction of divorce matters bestowed on regional courts, similar to the jurisdiction of the existing divorce courts. Once again, really just be written, no provisions of the Administration Amendment Act into this Magistrates Act. A new 1C, the regional court can only exercise its jurisdiction, civil jurisdiction, if there is a place for the holding of the court has been determined by a notice under Section 1211 Capital A. Again, we get this relates to the incremental approach that the envisaged is being followed. So just to prevent any expectations that when the bill is passed that people will expect all regional courts to start exercising jurisdiction. And we've made provision for this staggered approach that the minister must first say that that regional division will have a place for holding of the whole court. That place must be designated. And also in the designation must be what jurisdiction that court will exercise. It will be civil jurisdiction generally, or civil jurisdiction divorce matters, or a combination of that, just to make it very clear, to enable, in other words, that incremental approach. Then Clause 8 repeals Section 46.1 of the Magistrates Court Act. It's not clear in the bill itself what 46.1 is, so I put it in the presentation. At the moment, 46.1 of the Act provides that a court has no jurisdiction over matters, quote, in which the dissolution of a marriage or separation from head and board or of goods of married persons is sought, except under the provisions of the Indian Immigration Law of 1891. 25 of 1891. Clearly we're fulfilling this provision since this divorce jurisdiction is now being extended to regional courts, so this provision has become completely obsolete. There's also an argument that it might already be obsolete because we couldn't establish whether that Indian immigration law is obsolete. Let me get to the transitional provisions. Chair, I'm getting a bit worried by the silence, but I will just assume that you're almost ready to vote on the bill and carry on until tonight. Clause 9.1 deals with the pending matters in divorce court, which must be finalized, and if the bill has not been filed, it's not been passed, it's a very standard provision, there's nothing strange about that. Then in terms of clause 9.2, every divorce court becomes a court of the regional division designated by the minister, and the officers of those courts become officers of the regional court in question. 9.3 once again says that notwithstanding the areas of jurisdiction of any divorce court, that jurisdictional area will remain as it existed immediately before the commencement of this section. And insofar as that area of jurisdiction overlaps with other jurisdiction areas, then those other jurisdictional or other regional divisions or the relevant portions thereof are deemed to have been annexed to the regional division of the court in question in terms of the new section 21E, capital A of the Act. And lastly, the place or places of sitting of those courts must be deemed to have been designated in terms of the notice of the place 21. Because already for purpose for the divorce court, there are places of sitting established, they issue it in the best, they issue their circuit. So this is just to make sure that all the arrangements in place as far as those courts are concerned will stay, will remain in place until it is changed by a competent authority. The rules of the divorce court will also remain in place until they are appealed, repealed or amended. Then there's a provision that was added in the National Assembly. It's quite clear that if you extend civil jurisdiction to a regional court, at the moment the magistrate's court rules are designed for the district court. Now you're looking at extended civil jurisdiction, you're also looking at divorce jurisdiction, so they will need rules and they will need new rules. And in the deliberations of the portfolio committee in the NA, it became very clear that people appreciate the rules the way in which the divorce courts are functioning at the moment. It is more user-friendly, apparently, than many of the other courts. More assistance is given to litigants by registrars. They do not always require to appoint legal practitioners or counsel to represent them. And we wanted to make sure that the nature of those courts are retained when it comes to the regional courts exercising their civil jurisdiction. So a clause has been added, 9.6, it says that the rules board for courts of law established by Section 2 of the Rules of Court Law Act must, within 6 months after the commencement of the Act, review and amend the existing rules of the Magistrates Court and the rules expressly in Section 4 in order to ensure that courts of regional divisions can exercise the jurisdiction conferred on them under the Magistrates Court Act and amended by the Act effectively and efficiently. But more importantly, I think it says any rules made or amended as a result of this Act must be aimed at enhancing access to the courts by, amongst others, and as far as reasonably possible, firstly providing for simplified and expeditious procedures, providing for clerks or registrars to assist litigants, limiting the costs associated with the litigation processes, retaining or improving the measures introduced by the rules especially in Subsection 4 and the divorce court rules, in order to facilitate and promote access to the courts in 13.1, or again, the regional court. And these rules must be submitted to Parliament. Members will be happy to know that the rules must be submitted to Parliament.
Well,
then,
well,
Chair,
well,
yeah. 10 and 11,
that is to Parliament, hey?
To Parliament.
Well, well. It is a great meeting, eh?
You owe me something for that.
Thank you,
sir. 10 and 11 is simple. It deals with repeal and amendment of laws that serves as consequential changes. 11 is the short title and commencement clause. and you'll see once again that there's a strong emphasis being placed right on the incremental approach to the implementation of the Bill. 11.2 says, in fact, different dates may be fixed in respect of different regional divisions for the purposes of the Act. Chairman, with that beautiful process, I conclude.
Thanks, Mr. Lange, for taking us through this bill in a simplified version. That's concluding a nice picture there. Colleagues, this is our first briefing, small briefing. So a lot of us ask questions randomly. What is the facilitate?
Is the sun set just for the bill? The sun is setting on the judicial system or what?
Thank you, and thank you for your opportunity to keep off on what the program is. Just a few questions. The one that we start at the schedule here, namely on page 9. Is this something new, namely that we can send, the principal can send these article clerks to appear on his behalf or on her behalf and then charge the normal fee to which that principal is entitled to? Do I understand it correctly? From page 9, the extent of the amendment. That's my first question. It's round about line 20 on that page. Then, Chairperson, second question, and that is there any indication of what the amount of such regional court jurisdiction will be? I know we know what the magistrate court is certain cases around the south. And let me interrupt myself, Chairperson. I think this legislation is long overdue. It should have been coming long, long ago. Cap regional courts only to criminal matters should have been amended long ago. And then another one, the liquidation matter that's provided for in clause 7, down about line 36, is that only in connection with the close corporation?
I must say that I'm not aware of any other determinations of that particular act. Thank you, Chair.
Yeah,
any other shortage of magistrates who have got
civil litigation knowledge, apart from the new court that has been established, is there going to be quite a vacuum there? Or is it a question of trial by error? They just got to, do the course. And do you think the course would be sufficient to qualify a magistrate to handle civil litigation matters?
The issue is quite an important issue. But at the same time, I would be happy if in the next meeting we are presented with a program of implementation. When you go to the province, it's clear that the department has a lot of good intentions, which were not backed up by the foundation. And I don't think one of the government must be transformed by type of plan. There must be a plan for implementation in terms of resources, offices, staff, and everything. So that we don't have law that at the end of the day they end up in the problem in relation to what is going on. I'm saying, I think that will be presented in the next meeting. And that's why I'm discussing that. We are saying it's the same thing, plan, but let's see the way it is. There is no doubt to me that it's a good idea, that the idea is good in terms of it. But if you go to your slide number, sorry, not number, but on clause 8. We are talking there of a dissolution of a marriage or separation from bride and court. What does that mean?
I was also worried about the court.
You make it
Yeah,
thank you, Jenna. Obviously, I agree with everybody that this should have probably happened a long time ago. But the reason it didn't happen is because you might be resistant from the magistrate's side. Would anything like that come across your path since you started with this research? Thank you.
Thanks,
Jenna,
for
the time.
Thanks, Chairperson. Is there any difference between the civil courts, the labor court, the commercial court? Are we talking about one court or the deep of the channel? Thank you.
Not yet.
Let me start from...
No, let me... Yeah, can you respond there?
Thanks very much, Chi. And try and start from the top. On page 9, there was, I think, Dr. von der Heeren inquired about, on page 9, line 20, thereabouts. I'll have to look at the detail. What I can say here is we're not changing anything. And what we're changing here is just consequential. Division of the Supreme Court changed to High Court. And then, of course, the divorce courts are being abolished, so we're omitting that. So I don't think there's anything new. It's the existing law at the moment. Whether I hope I'm answering your question.
In other words, I, as principal, can send my ask the clerk and then charge the fees, which is due to me then, even if I don't appear.
Yes, I understand it, yes. I understand the position. Secondly, I think still with Dr. Sanyarindan. I would be speculating. There is speculation with regard to the amount, but nothing's been tied up, so I think let's not create any expectations. Let me not mention. I know that there's substantial increase for the district court in the village, which would obviously mean that the regional court will have a very substantial. I don't know that. What is interesting, what I can just draw your attention to, you'll see that the focus, the way that the civil jurisdiction has been extended by looking at monetary values, there was a very strong argument, which we from the department side can also support, that we should actually look beyond that kind of jurisdiction. We should look to things that are currently outside of jurisdiction of magistrate court and maybe extend that to the regional court as well. But it is probably a debate for another day. So we really say that this is, we've never had this jurisdiction. So let's not start with everything at once. Let's take a first step.
A positive look at it.
Yeah. Yes, I agree the legislation is long overdue. With regard to Clause 7, once again, there's no change in the law here. We refer to CC, it's line 36, yeah, action, yeah, as you can see, that is exactly the existing law. What is possibly uncertain there is whether we should, or whether properly in the rule, if we now say that the civil jurisdiction can also be extended or exercised by the regional court, this existing provision simply says that CCs can be liquidated at magistrate court level. So you need some sort of criteria to determine when will it be done in the district court, when will it be done in the regional court. So that's going to be something to look at in the rule. Then there was a question, and I've just seen this on the, I don't know, that is not very big, the question about whether the divorce courts are at the moment. Let me jump ahead of my colleague, not here yet. If I can just go to that chapter of the divorce court. This, currently, they've got three divisions, the Northeast Division, the Central Division, the Southern Division. It's seated in Durban, Johannesburg, and Port Elizabeth. Durban has circuits, you can see they're from Mpongeni, Shawe, etc., up to Triage. Johannesburg from Plattsburg, right to Wormerenstad, Port Elizabeth, Atlantis, Belfast, Bethlehem, Mthatha, Bloemfontein, interestingly enough, Cape Town, is London, etc. So they are really serving most of the country. As I said, we will retain those courts, although they will be incorporated in the regional court division, and we will retain the personnel, but obviously we will have to do more adjustments. That is part of the whole implementation strategy. So from day one, we will not be extending more of the service than we are extending at the moment, but we are looking at really extending AAP. The word referred to the forces chair. Regarding the shortage, yes, my discussions, and this is not official, our discussions with the regional court president seem to indicate that approximately between 30 and 40 of the present regional court magistrates did in fact specialize in civil work before they eventually gave in to the temptations of ambition and accepted elevation to the regional court. So, but they are, say, that would probably put them at about 10 to 15% of the regional court bench at the moment. So we do have quite a big need for some refresher courses, etc. Then there's also about would a course be sufficient. There was quite some debate about that. And our response is simply no, we don't think a course in itself would necessarily be sufficient. But the Magistrates Commission must at all times be satisfied before they put names on the list. And I think the list is the important thing. The Magistrates Commission must, before they put that name on the list, be satisfied that whoever they put on the list has suitable knowledge of and expertise in the civil litigation matters to preside over the adjudication of civil disputes. But the people to get on the list, there are three possibilities, as you said, and I'm looking at sub 8 on page 4 from line 35. Three possibilities: the South African Judicial Education Institute issued a duly signed certificate. Now, I think we must have some faith in the standard that will be set by this institution. It will be a new institution and they will really carry the image and the professionalism of the judiciary. I think they will put a lot of emphasis on that. Secondly, as I've said, that the B part is really an interim measure, suspending the establishment of the education institute. And then, of course, the C part is where the commission, purely on the CV of the magistrate itself, will be happy that that person has the required expertise to exercise that jurisdiction. But I want to make a cautionary remark here, Chair. We have the same experience in the portfolio committee, and that is just that, and maybe it's more personal from my side, but I'm always hesitant to put too much emphasis on specific training for a specific person. Nowhere will you read that a person must attend a course before he or she can exercise criminal jurisdiction. Now, criminal jurisdiction, if you start comparing with civil jurisdiction really touches monetary aspects of your life. It can touch your income, it can touch your finance, it can touch your assets. Criminal jurisdiction, you can sentence people to life imprisonment in a regional court. In the high court, there's also never any distinction. And we all know what the jurisdiction there is. So I think one should just be careful not to put too much emphasis on the court system that you must now be qualified to exercise the civil jurisdiction. If you get to the district court level, there's no such requirement. If I get appointed as a magistrate in a district court, I can exercise any jurisdiction of that magistrate court. I can deal with domestic violence, I can deal with maintenance matters, I can deal with criminal matters within the jurisdiction of the court, and I can deal with the civil matters within the jurisdiction of the court. So I'm always a bit thinking, why then, when you're elevated to the next level of the bench, you will isolate a particular field of the law and they require some special courses to be attended. In this case, it's probably making sense because you are faced with a situation where some of the magistrates have been there for a long time and they've only done civil work. But I'm just leaving that on the side that we can ponder and reflect on it. Kefa referred to, yes, Mr. Kostana will give you what I'm using is borrowing from him. That is another slide show, but I don't have the expertise or the confidence to take you through this. It's really been prepared by him, and you'll see that there's a very detailed implementation plan already being developed by the department. Yes, the separation from bed and board, I think it's probably rather archaic. I don't think the other lawyers here can assist me here. When I used to study this at university, you had all sorts of possibilities at the time. People not necessarily getting divorced, but they separating at an early stage, and then some issues arise. For example, whether you can claim maintenance from the spouse, etc. As I understand it, this is really what it is referring to, but I also understood that the whole concept of separation from taking forward is rather archaic. It's something that's based out that we do not really have anymore. Unless Mr. Bishop wants to revise the concept, develop a little bit further.
I'm thinking this better for
Mr. Leroux, I think referred to the attitude of the magistrates. They're very enthusiastic, especially from the regional court bench. We've been on a tremendous pressure ever since. Then there was a stage, until fairly recently, where there was some suspicion, maybe suspicion is not the correct expression, there was a concern among the magistrates of the district court that this is really targeting regional court magistrates and looking at career and advancement for regional court magistrates, possibly to the detriment of the district court, until we've explained and they've reread the bill and to see, but this is really actually enhancing their career prospects more so than for the regional court magistrates. There is, of course, some circles, there is a concern that courts that are already overburdened in some respects will now be given added jurisdiction, and that's why I say we're really putting a lot of emphasis on the incremental approach here. We're not going to take any steps, hopefully, that we cannot, we're not ready to, we do not have the capacity to do something to the detriment of another service. And there was the question, I'm not too sure, Chair, whether I understood the question regarding the difference between court, labor court, etc. correctly, and please bear with me in my reply. I think the difficulty is that the Magistrates Court Act deals with lower courts at a certain level. Really just two, district courts, regional courts. The only other lower courts that I'm aware of, small claims courts, which is a different act, so they are distinct, to be distinguished from this. The other bill that is before you at the moment, relating to traditional leaders, that court concept there, that's also at the lower court level. Labor courts, and this, maybe I should just answer that most courts are, well, any four courts, in fact, are created by statute. Some of them, the Constitution simply recognizes that the Constitutional Court, the Supreme Court of Appeal, the High Court, and Magistrates Court, and then the Constitution refers to other courts created by an act of Parliament. Labor courts, they've been created in the Labor Relations Act, the Income Tax Act created income courts, we've got land claims courts, but each court created under this specific act. Some or most of those courts are on the level of the High Court or even more senior to the High Court. So I think I've bored you enough in terms of my voice now.
No. You know this thing. No. In fact, the wife was there one day. Sometimes people are separated. They stay in the same house, but not the same place. You know that? I don't know about the board, but I don't know about the date.
Bed and table.
Bed and
table.
Now, Johan, you're saying currently the divorce court, I want you to in a simple term, the three divorce courts, currently they stand. What's going to happen to them? I know that's the problem of the fact that the world matters are also going to be heard in the assemblies of court, right? Now, I want to know exactly what's going to happen to them as they can carry this divorce court.
We've got, as you said, Bloemfontein, Durban, Johannesburg. Johannesburg and Port Elizabeth. That's the main piece of three divisions. So what will happen is the minister will say, Durban, I make you part of the regional division covering Durban, but for we also said that they retain the territorial jurisdiction until we start chopping and changing that. So the Durban Divorce Court will become part of, for example, the Durban Regional Court. But the jurisdiction of that regional division then for divorces will cover the whole of the area that previously been covered by the court in Durban. And the same with regard to the one in Port Elizabeth and the one in Johannesburg. So they will continue to exist as they are at the moment.
But we'll now cover more places.
They will cover the same places. They will cover the same places, but they will be known under another name. They will just be known as the Durban Regional Court, exercising jurisdiction in the vast area. How long that will be continued, it's not too sure. We probably can move quite quickly with regard to the divorce, because we do have quite some capacity to deal with that as well. I can also just mention here, it's very obvious that this bill will enhance access to justice, because you're extending jurisdiction to a level of court that do not have jurisdiction at the moment. But we would also want to caution about getting too excited about this access being extended. We certainly do not want to encourage people to start divorcing their partners. So access in the sense that you need not go to a high court. But it would not mean that lots of people would all of a sudden now go to court to where they do not go to court. The same with civil litigation as well. You never want to encourage people to take people to court. But at least, if you need to take people to court, then you can give you an alternative for us that we do not litigation to the high court, but to the other court. Another caution, in some circles, there's excitement about the process of taking matters to the regional court from the practitioner's point of view, because they can charge a certain level of fee. You will make very sure in the rule to cover that aspect. That's one of the reasons why we certainly entered that specific part on the way that the rules must be drafted, looking at issues of cost, access, etc.
Yeah, I recognize some of those controversies of the special advice. Welcome to the part of.
Okay, thank you.
Now, it simplifies because before the whole court had to go to the higher court rather than the federal court. So now, why the delay of the whole case now? You watch. There were several scared to go there because there's expensive and whatever. But now, now, under what circumstances will the minister unless designated to be. What is that going to be? The minister is given power to annex to a designated area to be.
It forms part of another regional division for certain purposes. This is the typical example, in fact. As I said, for example, we say the regional court in Durban will have your divorce jurisdiction, but you can see that Durban court sits in Mpangeni, Ishawi, Nelspruit, Lobowa, Fomo, Newcastle, Polokwane, Pretoria, Kloland, Australia. Those are not areas that are normally covered by the Durban regional division. But for the purposes of divorce, those areas will now be deemed to be annexed to the Durban regional division so that they can exercise the jurisdiction there. So when you do not have the capacity to create separate courts at the place, then you annex that area to the other court that has the capacity so that court can exercise the jurisdiction.
Okay. So
another
interesting thing is we now have the same jurisdiction
in
the High Court.
They do that. They have that in the meeting.
Are we not dealing with the demarcation of the magistrate court? Remember that person came and accepted the jurisdiction of the magistrate court. So we wanted to, when are we going to deal with the proper demarcation
dealt with by the Iskisana at the moment. It won't be a problem because we already have the empowering provision that is this act. And the power that the ministry is exercising in terms of the act. They are in that process. I know that he's very, very well informed as far as that is concerned. Unfortunately, I'm afraid I can't assist. I know that the process is ongoing at the moment.
Okay.
Any other
questions?
Thank you, Chair. Just one question with regard to this training and appropriate experience, efficient experience. that is with regard to the presiding officer. It has always been the case that there has been a requirement for one to appear in the Supreme Court or High Court. Now, I heard you saying, or I've seen here, that a candidate attorney will be able to appear in a regional court. I take it that the regional court will be dealing with more complex cases. Does this issue of training not apply to them at all? Now that we are saying the magistrate must definitely undergo some training in order to be suitable to preside over cases in the regional court.
I'm just trying to collect my thoughts on that. We're not giving a candidate attorney a right to appear in the regional court, if I understand it correctly, if I read this provision correctly. In other words, we're not changing the existing position. The position is that the candidate attorney can only appear if he or she has previously practiced as an advocate or for at least half a year, has served for at least 1 year under the Articles of Conduct Contract of Service, or at least one year's experience as a staff advocate, staff prosecutor, or magistrate. And presently, that provision says that proviso is also applicable in the respect of the actual mechanics of the right of appearance in a divorce court. But we now are receiving divorce court. So it's not necessary, but I gather that the question is really whether we should not require more training for the advocate or for the candidate attorney.
Yes.
I suppose that's a possibility, Chair, although that candidate attorney can already appear in the divorce court. Let's just say that that can already appear in the divorce court. Now they really, and as I've said, we're back to the argument. I think it's not necessarily correct to accept that more complicated matters will go to the magistrate court or will go to the regional court. Because the complication in civil, you see, the test in civil cases is never how complicated the issue is. That's why I said that other argument arose, whether we should look at monetary value to the limit of restriction, or that we should look at causes of action. Now, monetary value, it can be the most complicated cases in the world, but if there's a certain monetary value attached, it will go to the district court. And if the monetary value is higher, it will go to the regional court. So I think the point is just that the complication of the issue is not really the test of which court it will land up in. And I think that's one thing we will look at in future, to see whether that would not be a better test for extending to the section.
I guess I think I just said that, but then we'll come to share it because we'll continue to use this provision tomorrow. But one question for me, and again, since the regional court is now also on this civil matter, looking at the shortage of this presiding officer, I will not do better in this court now. Then look at the sum of the reserve judgment that are still there in our court. I don't know, I'm maybe left something.
So now your concern has been expressed by quite a number of people too. That is why I say that we're putting all this effort, all this emphasis on the incremental approach. I think I know that David will tomorrow inform me that they've already earmarked 53 new trusts to cater for the new jurisdiction. Of course, the existing presiding officers in the divorce courts will keep office, So there's not a big change there or any change at all. That's all being anticipated. But from the department side, the intention is very clearly not to. You see, that's why we have this these detailed provisions that you can only extend your jurisdiction once a place was sitting as in designated by a notice in the Gazette by the minister. And in that notice must also say when that court considers the place, does it deal with civil matters, or does it deal with divorce matters, or does it deal with both civil and divorce matters. So you really have all the tools to make sure that you only roll out where you can deliver. At the moment, the regional courts do not have a clock or a register. The divorce courts do that. So, but you need to create a position like that for the regional courts in order to enable them. As you probably would know, that the registrar does a lot of work when it comes to civil matters. The form of paper statute, the default judgment, all those kind of things that the registrar must do. So we're really creating four regional courts, we're creating a trust of registrar. We're not converting any other trust. But I just say that the vision is in the not too distant future to convert indeed the ordinary class, but that will be coupled with qualification requirements and things like that. So that's right. The feeling is just that it should become more professional, not just class. But now for the time being, we're not converting any class.
Can you talk to what the only a magistrate of the regional division who is appears on the radar there may adjudicate the on the civil district. Now, talk about this list here. Let me tell you about the
That is really just a filtering mechanism to ensure that whoever presides in those matters has been through a selection process. Either a process of selection by the Magistrates Commission because of a certificate given to it from that new South African Judicial Education Institute, or another appropriate training course determined by the Magistrates Commission themselves, or the person may be appointed by the Magistrates Commission on account of his or her proven ability to be a good civil adjudication presiding officer. But the thing is, you must just have the list. So once your name is on the list, then you can exercise the list. But you can only get on the list if you comply with the other city requirements. I can just mention that the concept is more or less the same as we've got in the Equality Courts. Remember the Equality Courts, the judges in those cases must also go on a specific course, and then they are entered on a list of judges who can actually exercise the quality of issues.
So, are we not
necessarily
gatekeeping for other judicial officers?
I suppose some would argue that way, but I do not know if this will be a permanent feature in any event after the legislation. I think it's only because it is so new and we do have such a big contingent of regional court magistrates for years now have been out of the fold of civil adjudication. But that's my personal feeling. I do not think this particular provision will survive the test. But when the bigger rationalisation when the act is in place, I don't think we will have this. I think there will be other ways.
Any questions? That said, I will continue tomorrow with the same discussion with the matter further. Then I will be here to ask why are we having only rotating commercial
on the charge of drunken driving, he was suspended from office for a period of 6 months without remuneration. It was part of the minister then had. He was empowered to impose such a sanction. It was found to be unconstitutional by the Hungarian matter afterwards, and thereafter the act was amended. As far as the other charges are concerned, he was merely cautious. And on the 2nd of December 2003, he was again convicted on charges of failing on several occasions to silence his sponsor revealing justice query. Failing to silence the third court, the case for automatic review. Failing to assume reasons for judgment in a few cases and being absent in a number of cases from action. On these charges, Mr. Salazanga was severely reprimanded by the deciding officer and cautious that any further convictions of misconduct could lead to the sanction of removal from office. On the 20th of March 2006, the commission again charged Mr. Salazanga with four counts of misconduct. The charges related to contravention of different regulations of the regulated judicial office in the lower court and can be summarized as follows. In the period 16 August 2004 to 5 January 2006, he absented himself from office a total of about 57 days. During the period 27 May 2005 to 16 January 2006, he failed to adhere to office hours. He reported late for duty. During the period January 2005 to December 2005, he was late submitted judicial return to the judicial head of office, and also during January 2005 and the 17th of January 2005, he elected to sign the attendance register, refusing to execute the laws of order. And the attendance register was pretty put there for him to sign because of the duty his late arrival at the office and not reporting for duty. The misconduct inquiry against Mr. Zoloman becomes commenced on the 26th of July 2006. After several postponements, at Mr. Zoloman's request, the inquiry was finally postponed to the 14th and 15th of February 2007. It was by then represented by two different attorneys during the course of this period. On the 14th of February, Mr. Zoloman admitted guilt in writing after having appointed counsel to all four counts of misconduct referred to above. Having questioned Mr. Zoloman in terms of Regulation 2069, the presiding officer testified that he was indeed guilty of charge. The inquiry was subsequently postponed on the defense request to the 19th of May for the introduction of the circuit. And the first time mentioned that on that specific day, it was submitted to the tribunal that Mr. Zoloman wanted to reduce for put up a report that he was had an alcohol problem. And therefore they wanted the social worker's report to be submitted the next day, which was on the 9th of May. On the 3rd of May, Mr. Salabanzi's counsel informed the Commission that due to other commitments in the High Court, he would be unable to attend the misconduct inquiry for the imposition of sanction on the 9th and 10th of May, and the matter was then postponed until the 27th and 28th of June 2007. He was duly notified in writing of this arrangement, and he acknowledged receipt on the 21st of May. Now, on the 27th of June, neither Mr. Salabanzi nor his counsel appeared at the hearing. Again, the initial head of office testified that he had last seen Mr. Salazar on the 22nd of June at the office, and that Mr. Salazar did not contact him at all. Having satisfied himself that proper notice of the hearing was given to Mr. Salazar, the presiding officer ordered that the misconduct inquiry for purpose of the imposition of the sanction be proceeded with and his absence. And he then recommended that Mr. Salazar be removed from office. The authority, in terms of the Act, then he stated that the minister must suspend magistrate if the commission recommends that he be removed from office in terms of section 33 34A of the Act. And such a report must be tabled to Parliament by the minister within 14 days of such suspension. As has indicated the opposite deciding in the most part of the proceedings. And against Mr. Solibam, they recommend that we remove from office. The deciding officer was of the view that Mr. Solibam does not take his last course in war seriously. And less than a year later, in August 2004, he again started absenting himself from office duty without a legal valid cause and began failed to attend to official office hours. Starting off with the third fund, I have been grossly election of duty and a complete application of judicial responsibility on part of Mr. Solibandi, and accordingly recommended his removal from office. Mr. Solibandi was informed in writing of his charges of anxiety, lost his status to the commission, so why should he have been removed from office? Having done so, the commission, the starting officer considered. Well, having considered starting off finding a recommendation and with a presentation submitted on behalf of the Bundy, the Commission at this meeting held on the 22nd of November resolved to accept the recommendation of the starting officer of Mr. Mozilla Bundy to be removed from office. The chair, the presiding officer, imposed detention in Mr. Mozilla Bundy's absence, like I said earlier. It was mentioned today before the person giving the evidence was informed by the presiding officer that he was admitted to a clinic in the country. The country did that the country was unmade. Here from the minute of the proceedings on the 27th of June. The matter of chance, Mr. Solibandi is relatively representative, Mr. Swansboy Lampaston, sent to the staff on Monday, 25 June, approximately 2 o'clock, at the Swansboy's phone room, as you know, the person giving evidence on behalf of the commission, Mr. Swansboy, that is Mr. Solibandi's counsel, phoned me and informed me that he understands that Mr. Solibandi has been admitted to a mental institution. He could not furnish any further particulars about Mr. Solibandi. He also informed me that he might doubt if he has a mandate to appear on behalf of Mr. Solibandi. This morning, the 27th of June at 9:45 in the journey, Mr. Makanya phoned me. He informed me that Patrick has planned to send his brief regarding Mr. Solibandi. He also informed me that the parent of Mr. Solibandi has been admitted to an institution. He could not give any particulars about the institution. He also informed me that he will not attend today's hearing, as he has an instruction. I informed him that I'm going to request that the hearing be received this in the absence of Mr. Solibandi. He indicated that he had no problem with that, but requested that I inform the meeting about the situation. And then the officer stands on the fact that he was postponed at the last hearing on the 14th of February, and it was demanded to the 9th and the 10th of May for the party to receive evidence before the imposition of sanction. At the beginning of May, Mr. Swansboy was and requested him that the matter could be heard on a later date, as he had an argument about in the High Court on those dates, and then the mutual decision decided to place the matter before the hearing on the 7th of June. And then he requested that he called Mr. Matabani, Solibandi head of office, to produce evidence to testify on the oath what happened on that specific day, what the Solibandi is there about testifying to the imposition of sanction on the 27th of June. Okay. You want me to also do that this year? Mr. Matabani, under oath, testify that he is in the region of his office in San Marcos. Two magistrates are serving on the establishment of the office, myself and Mr. Solibandi. The server may receive a fax from Mr. Stoppelberg to serve a notice of hearing on Mr. Solibandi. The 21st of May, the document was served to Mr. Solibandi and the magistrate. Mr. Solibandi signed for the document and acknowledged the details. Mr. Solibandi is not present today. I saw him last on the 22nd of June at the office, written to the also did not see him on the 25th and 26th of June. I do not know when Mr. Solibandi has an official cell phone, and Mr. Solibandi knows the number. Then he told me either on myself and other officers. Then the witness was excused and the representative for the commission requested that the hearing be proceeded with in his absence, and that was the ruling of the deciding officer, after which the deciding officer made a ruling and a recommendation in terms of sanction. Then representations were submitted to the commission for the request to refer to the deciding officer. The deciding officer was reviewed that he is come to the CTO at that stage, was come to the CTO, and that it was for the commission to consider the representation. So the commission invited Mr. Fulabanti's attorney to submit the representation in terms of introduction of extension to the commission, and the commission having considered the representation of the duties of the deal that it's going to be so serious that it should be removed from office. Then we will not put all the office of matters to everyone. Now, in his representation, on the 5th of November 2007, the attorney page 3 of the letter to the commission on the 5th of November 2007 says, paragraph 7 on page 3, we brought to the attention of the commission the following fact. When Zion pleaded guilty as legal representative, Mr. Strutboy indicated the client had alcohol dependency problems and that needed to reduce evidence in that regard, and the commission put the client's mind in terms of the regulation. I request the commission to postpone the imposition of the sanction and afford Mr. Villabundi an opportunity to get company or do any of these things. And then, in terms of regulation. And that of the view that time has not been afforded an opportunity to give such evidence, it came to our attention on the 26th of June, the time was submitted under the care of special scientists at Mark, Caffeyhead Institution in London, submitted. On the 27th of June, the writer of telephone, the evidence needed in the morning, advised that the inspector office was agreed to in the past, there was no need for a lawyer to travel all the way from the planning and the office. In fact, he understood the advice of the starting office according. Apparently, that was never conveyed to the starting office. Of course, the letter of the office was submitted differently, if you never hear that plan was admitted at the mark. That was what? In fact, it was admitted. Officers come back to the deciding officer and the deciding officer in every village to the commission to proceed in that. We then requested the commission to postpone the suggested action by the deciding officer to report time to the team to make the presentation in terms of regulation 2017-84. What I already mentioned is the chair that the major presentation that the request to refer it back to the deciding officer. Then they report that to the commission.
I think it's enough. And that is something we knew that was set up, but I think and I didn't like you before. But if I can continue, if I'm not stopping you, you can continue if you want to.
Maybe I can just add that the bank is one.
What was that request?
Well, to indicate that he is prepared, I have children at school, but I do them well, and of course, that, he has to maintain them, and that if he removes them off it, that he will be, that his family will be treated to keep them.
Yeah, the only thing that concerns me particularly was the fact that I'm contemplating the rest of the documents that he was not given sufficient attention to the fact that he has a problem with the body. But the fact remains, the Magistrate Commission decided that despite that it should be removed from office. So, but it concerns me.
Let me check with our internal advisor on the process, if the process was the normal process was followed, but that's the one coming. Then we'll do the other part of this man with one. So for now, take all processes for the
procedure. I must admit it was the professor that read this presentation. The point that worries me is at least when one listens to the presentation, one gathers an impression that one, at all material times, it looks like this is really what we intended to present this case. And we seem that. On the 27th of June 2007, he was admitted, or there was this allegation that he was admitted in the hospital. And when I read through this documentation, there is basically some correspondence indicating that he was admitted unless there's evidence to the contrary. There's a gray area that the commission doesn't seem to have addressed that. In this type of proceedings, I think what is imperative is how the Altare Patriarch rules that the other party should be given an opportunity to present his or her case. The lack thereof, as indicated on the 27th of June, and the correspondence from his attorney does indicate that overlooking of Mr. Zeribabi's predicament. I don't think the commission can authoritatively say he was not admitted to the mental institution. And if one was admitted in a mental institution, that becomes a very serious event. Unless the commission could produce evidence that clearly says, no, this was a fabrication and which is not coming from the presentation, I think these circumstances warrant some further investigation. And I don't think one is comfortable with the process that was followed. Thank you.
Maya, can you comment on the process that is led by Mr. Banal before I allow them to take question on this?
Thank you. On the 14th of February, he admitted to the guilt on the very common stuff. And then there was the term of Mr. Philodontic's case. Found a report by a social worker and to do evidence at the hearing to announce that the sentence was made to commit mitigating circumstances. And was obviously not done. So on the 9th of May, it was the 24th, 7th of June. And then on the 27th of June, it was now, I don't think it was, there's no, we can't confess that he was the confess. And I think the commission that in due time. But having been found guilty of the misconduct, and having had previous conviction of misconduct, the commission thought it would be in the interest of the industry to be removed from office. That is all I can say.
Okay, he pleaded guilty. And I consider this was one as well for student qualification. But we're not supposed to appear for litigation. I think it's very good to appear.
That is
correct. But
the presentation to this significantly than the commission. Of course, the time on. Because the time on is that the commission. And they had a right to appeal to the commission. So you watch the presentation to the commission. The commission then, without of course doing all of that, considered the written representation on three and a half forwarded by the students. And on these documents, the commission makes its recommendations.
Sure. It seems like we have to hear communication.
The man, I think, is using a bedroom boy, bed and a boy, now having to play here. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, you can have the radio voice. Yeah, I don't think you have to come in about another piece, so I'll allow members to comment on this. Maybe we're still thinking of whatever. Colleagues, there we are. So the part of this, and the commission, the minister is recommending, and before she can take some action in the parliament, we have to endorse or say yea or nay. Honorable level?
Absolutely clear that he's not fit to be a magistrate. We cannot allow people like this to sit on the bank. And then, I'm not sure what you said about him not being a psychiatrist. I didn't hear you while you were also using your bedroom voice. But he actually saw a psychiatrist, and the psychiatrist said that the only problem with him is that he's an alcoholic. He's got no other problems, psychiatric problems. It's only that he's an alcoholic.
Yeah, thanks, Chairperson. I did not hear the response from the
mayor.
Yeah, because I just wanted to check this whether the process was followed correctly. You remember last time we took a decision and it was found that there were some processes which were not followed, and then the magistrate was brought back because of not following the due process. Now, I did not get whether all the processes were followed correctly, but what are the response?
Thank you. This is why I have to comment. Let me just deal that to the paper or just deal that on the process.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There are actually two processes. The one is the disciplinary inquiry, the misconduct inquiry itself, which must be procedurally and substantially fair. And then we have the process in terms of which the minister must submit a report in Parliament, having considered the commission's recommendation. Now, what the letter process is concerned, I think everything has been according to the Act. The Act says that if section 13.3a of the Act, actually sitting before the Act, if the commission recommends that the Act is getting moved from office, one on the ground of misconduct, the minister must suspend that magistrate from office, or if that magistrate, that provision is suspended, confirm the suspension. And then the report of the suspension in terms of paragraph A must be tabled in Parliament by the minister within 14 days of such suspension. If Parliament is then in session, or if Parliament is not then in session, within 14 days after the commencement of its next session. The minister did filed a report. The defendant has to build a boundary from office on the 19th of December and filed a report in that regard in Parliament. So it was actually within Parliament. That the imposition of the sanction was imposed in Jackie. And the deciding officer was informed that the particular magistrate was committed to office. At that stage, there was no proof of that. They wanted enough to be postponed to enable them to accuse seven magistrates that we had been having alcohol. Now, when we, the commission, still invited him to submit the legislation, the sidewalk also brings up the regulation, requested him to submit the legislation. When he submitted the legislation, he commissioned the deciding officer to command him that he said, I have already made a deal. So I can't be affecting my employer. So he said, I'm pretty specific here. I would leave it for the commission to look at. So the commission extended another invitation, a further representation, and all these representations were considered in November 2014 by the commission. The commission made a final recommendation to the
United States. This is also the matter of inclusion before our upcoming election.
My friends are known on this matter, you know, the issue of removing a person from a body employment must be an act of the last resort. Why is all you know, as an ANC in the room, we pride of ourselves to say what to say to the back. Telling stuff like telling up to employees. You know, this man has not done anything other than to say that is criminal. You know, when you see, when you do certain things, when you measure, when you do with a criminal intent. His weakness is his ability to get wet. Not only ability to work, but also to preserve health. Which the doctors are complaining this is caused by alcohol abuse. That is dependent on alcohol. Now, there's an argument here which is presented to Mr. Mayor that deals with the issue of Section 26, Subsection 17, Subsection A, Subsection 4. Which is raising an issue around the responsibility of government, which is in the Public Service Act, to say that before you remove a person, you do everything else, which deals with counseling, it deals with treatment, and also the training program, which will be in the purpose of performance. I mean, that is the intention of the government. That's the intention. You don't just remove people. Now, in South Africa, one of the major things that we have. We have a shortage of less prominent legal practice. We have that. Now, for you, for us to sit here and approve a removal of this, because if you say, as a commission, you are saying that you didn't get the information on time, which the lawyers are presenting something different. They are saying they stand this thing, and they didn't speak that they'll go themselves back. Because it's a conveying of a message.
that because they're living from Islam and Muhammad appointed a priest. But the message that says this custom is important. And they hope that your staff members are going to complain, which is deleted. Therefore, the hearing continues. The letters of this happening on the fact that this thing is complained. It continues. Now, you discover later that no, in fact, there was this. Now, you say no, irrespective of a new evidence, I stick to my gun. To me, I think that's a bit off. It is not in the spirit of trying to correct and bring the caring to that. Now, in that respect, Chair, to me, I think this matter is not a matter that the Parliament we can step off in this to agree that it's not a problem. I think that what needs to be done is to continue engaging. Because to me, what you can have as an outcome of this problem is that this man must go for a reputation. That's what to me is about the other. Right? Because when you go there, when it was said on the last one, which I think to me was the final one, that the people in grace, that was saying you'll be removed from service if you continue to do this. Nobody. But the evidence is made now that says that the behavior of this person is caused by the fact that he's dependent on alcohol. Now it goes to the issue that says, the state as an exemplary society that must be emulated is supposed to check what are the causes of people who have a persistent behavior on a similar issue. What means the problem? The state is supposed to look at that. Because we want to encourage private sector to do the same. We can't do that. We can't encourage others to do it. It's going to be ourselves. Now I'm saying here, to me, I can find it difficult. I can sleep very bad at night if I can agree to this. That is my opinion. My conscience must be clear. This man, the state must do everything it can to pass the system. And that's my case. My name.
I hope I won't be left here. Your night will be peaceful, you know.
Have I done any evaluation and say, right, the did the miracle before, he was in the code, and that's what you want to see. As we walk the entire game organization, the other thing, as a union, and I want to maybe add to what I don't know, call it commonly the state. But man,
then
that's right. Then that's
right. We have this alcohol problem, and I keep on saying, you know what it does to people. And just by hiking the hope doesn't solve the problem. But just, you might now be doing more harm. And the alcohol problem is a secret. And one creator, even the, I don't want to say we bring it in where it came from, because then I might upset a lot of people. In no way that the alcohol abuse came from, especially in this country and amongst our people. And even I at the moment, I educating my children how to drink, to have a glass of wine would be good, and education next. So I want to say in the whole area of caring nature, I think this is really Jesus person a second time, at least, and walk with him the mile, and then he said, like he walked the mile with him, there seems to be no occasion. And he's always been there was redemption at the last moment for murder if you are Christian, who hung up next to the Lord before he passed away. So we can never say there's no redemption. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. First of all, to talk about the caring society now, to build a case around that, I mean, to build a caring society, we must have people that administer justice to do the right thing. That's how you start to build a caring society. We care for justice to be done well. That's the cornerstone of our democracy. So, I mean, I disregard what you said, as far as that's concerned, my learned thing. Secondly, everybody sees in what turmoil we are now with Doug Schulte and all this happening in our highest court. What we want to do is we want to create a feeling of absolute faith in our justice system. Now, if we as a committee say that this guy must sit on the bench, I mean, I can never go along with that. I think it is virtually disgraceful. He stole money, he didn't repay the money, he's up for drunken driving. He doesn't comply with any rules, even after being warned about that. If this is the type of guy you want on the bench, fine. But you pay a price for it. Thank you.
Well,
I just want to check. Well, when I was saying that the prosecutors and all that, I want to find out. Maybe I don't read properly this document. Whether I've seen there the recommendation by the attorney to say that he wants his client to be given a chance to get the rehabilitation. I want to find out whether the department took that advice to send this man to rehabilitation. If then he went to the rehabilitation and then the rehabilitation failed, then I would agree if that was done. But I want to check whether he was sent to rehabilitation center.
Thank you very much. Maybe on that one, yes, you were sent for the rehabilitation. You weren't there. Yeah, they didn't say you can't get again. Maybe it's just that way. Maybe that's that way. Maybe they're assisted.
No,
I'm supporting you. I have said he didn't go back to the rehab again. It shows that it means that he was healed.
Okay.
That's what I'm saying.
Oh.
That's what I'm saying. Because he didn't say he was supposed to go back, so now he's busy with the problem. Now, I'm just trying to know what you are saying. I'm not arguing any for or against for now. Rather, let's come in on the procedural point.
Yeah, basically, what I wanted to speak to was the process followed after the conviction. Once someone is convicted, then you, as a presiding officer, need to meet out an appropriate time. But you need to be guided. One, from the position of the employer. The employer would say, for example, we need this person out of the city because of X, Y, and Z. Therefore, it is imperative that the person convicted should also be given an opportunity for several of fairness of the process. So I would make this particular inquiry suspect in itself is the fact that the presiding officer made a impose the sentence without hearing the side of the convicted man. We understand that because he is from his official, he could not review his open disease, the matter had to go to the commission. That could be one might argue that it seems that the commission, having received the report from the presiding officer, notwithstanding the fact that there is an allegation that the attorney representing the convicted magistrate submitted the presentation to the commission. But to me, where I'm seated, one could well argue that the commission's mind had already been made. Or that the commission overemphasized the issue of the previous conviction of this magistrate at the expense of his personal circumstances. One would argue that, Chairperson, that one, it cannot be said that this magistrate must be dismissed. Solely because in the past he had been found guilty of misconduct. We need to understand that this particular magistrate was convicted for those misconduct. Although, in practice, previous convictions do, of course, count in determining a sentence in a certain case. I have serious doubt for many reasons that this submission by this convicted magistrate was properly considered by the court. Indeed, if it came to the commission that this person is probably behaving in the manner in which he was behaving because of the alcoholic problem that had, then the whole argument that Honorable Shikwebe and others have been propagating, because one looks at what harm could have happened to the department if they had given the popular magistrate an opportunity to go for the other. I think to me, where I'm seated, there seems to have been an overemphasis on what this particular magistrate did in the past and what the last sentence was, that should you repeat this, we're going to show you that at the expense of his personal circumstances. And I'm sent to be persuaded, I don't know, but that is the impression that I got from this particular case. And if then there has been an overemphasis on the previous conditions of this magistrate and the extent of his personal circumstances, I think it would be a miscarriage of justice if this magistrate was not afforded an opportunity to go for this rehabilitation. If he fails this rehabilitation, it would be justifiable then for the department to remove him. I have that sense that there has been an overemphasis on the previous conviction for which he was convicted and he paid dearly for those convictions. And expense of
this person.
Thank you.
By the way, you are suspended for 6 months without pay. That was a serious punishment. I think you have said this, June. Now, I'm led by that. I've been from the particular point of view. Just to sensitize us as Parliament, to say, in his opinion, you think that this other person doesn't. Here we are for this. Let me check those I want to have the second bite before I rule on the minute. I will not have the second bite on the minute. But I want the mayor to report. Let me give members to talk to the second alliance to come. Honorable
Secretary. Is it true, Tom Jason, that the gentleman went to the application out of his own volition, which is an unacceptable. In that, the doctor says that he was treated for that period and he showed determination and commitment to be off, to remain off alcohol. And say that the doctor will attend to follow up in terms of groups. That is. Now, the argument that we are making here is that the state has an obligation to speak to the employees as a leader of society. In fact, look after. Supposedly. In fact, that is not in what he thinks
is there. It is in regulation of the state. Particularly if you look at section 26, subsection 17, subsection 8, subsection 4. There it goes on to say that the matter is supposed to be the imposition of a sanction can be actually postponed for a period of 12 months. While in the period of 12 months, other measures have been taken, which include treatment, attendance and training program, and counseling. It's our law, okay? Now, the point that I'm making here is that these points were not done. Understand it. As you are saying that my learned friend, Manara there, is saying that in terms of the law, you can't do your own decision. They call the contact official. It means you can't do your own decision. But the law then gives that to the magistrate commission that you appeal to the commission. The commission is supposed to look with me if there's an event to look at it and to review in the new way. Now, that's what they were saying that the commission can do. It's continuing without a representative that is being taken by the perspective officer. Now, I'm saying that in that, on that basis, separately. Here, we have not stuck to our own law in terms of ensuring that certain measures are taken in terms of the prescribed provision of the law that I've taken. That's in that context, then, to me, that I'm still convinced that the magistrate commission is an appeal body in the state that was made, has not gone out of its way to look at opportunity. Even if it didn't take an FMI, the magistrate commission. Therefore, that's basically I'm saying I believe this house that on the basis of our own law, on the basis of our own objectives in terms of our civil society, and on the basis of what this name is raised. And it is not true. I want to challenge Mr. Leroux that in fact it is a discussion to say that the man stole the money. What is said there, that this man was given advance. An advance, the money is given by your employer, your bank. The bank. Then he's repaid. He never told. To say he's stealing, to take what does not belong to you. Doesn't belong to you. What is to steal. Then I'm saying, in that case, let's not be any good thing. Because if you look at it, the man, in fact, even was charged on government guys. Right? And sometimes and all like that. Okay? But you can see a trend of alcohol abuse. That is why I'm saying I think we must learn even in future that as a commission, we must encourage our protection officers, we must encourage people, that our people must, that they must go in extra mile to look at the risk of certain behavior. Behavior is not criminal, not with an intention of doing wrong. What are the reasons that we need to do? So to encourage those edible costs than coming here. I mean, I don't want to go separately to other issues that are raised, that this man is not the wife and so on and all that, and that's the question and all that. Those are social problems that are associated with the man in question. But my presentation is that let's allow them, let's look at it in a different. Thank you.
Anything advice from one or two colleagues? I'm not provoking any. I'm not provoking comments. Oh, let's take it as any.
No, I think I've been covered by most. I just want to add a small thing. You see, even this magistrate is even at the top and has, if this appears, a big deciding officer, then it will be met up from verdict. He wouldn't have been dismissed. Maybe, or there would have been some other sentencing. That's the third issue in the case, that we
want to create. I don't think he, maybe I was not honest, but I never said to put a judge or magistrate in a position that it's criminal. I don't think that committee will ever do that. I was trying to convey that Wagner was in place, the magistrate might have been under suspicion and might well have been in hospital. But it didn't matter to me that he's on the table. I think Wagner has gone on. And I don't think, I think part of being part of the school committee as a member, I think it's also my duty to protect the integrity of this committee, as saying that we would want such a judge as criminal and as a bad behavior or magistrate. I don't think we will condone any magistrate that has criminal integrity to be active. I think that is what one of the things that we will condone. I think we will be fair and honest if this person and all avenues that have been explored and the extra mile has been walked and they must be made the decision and this person is guilty, then we will do the right decision. I will also object to the motion of the flow. I don't think this needs to be brought in here. And I don't even think the federal justice has not even been found guilty. Allegation. And I don't want the statement of that, that I hope the judiciary is in favor. What is the perception out there if we set out to make sure that our judicial system is in favor because of that flaw? I just think that will not be the right way to go. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Having listened to all the comments, the last person I was going to speak in Cosmo Mobile, I want to give him the last speech on the matter before Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Chair. I think here, following on the procedural issues raised by the legal advisor and the honorable members, the question that we should ask ourselves is whether if the presiding officer had known that Mr. Zelibanzi was in a mental clinic or something like that, in that clinic on the day, that is on the 27th, whether he would have proceeded with the case anyway. If he would not have proceeded with the case, then we really should be sending this matter back. And I'm of the view that any reasonable presiding officer would not have proceeded with the case if a person is being hospitalized. I don't think he would have done so. And if that is the case, therefore the matter should really be sent back for a review.
Thank you very much. Mr. Mayor, can I now hear from Mr. Lapsake to come in?
Mr. Chair, I just want to say that I don't think one can really say that there is a duty upon the state to refer a person. I think what this particular regulation is about is just a sentencing option. So the presiding officer or the commissioners could have imposed the sentence. There's no duty. It's a sentence option. I suppose the presiding officer has in fact considered this a possible option. I just assume. If I read the documents correctly, the presiding officer was informed about a day or two before he imposed the sentence that Mr. Zelibanzi is in that institution, and the reason for that. Although it was not expanded very much, it just indicated that he was there. He nevertheless went ahead to impose the sentence. Now, I don't know what the commissioner has taken into account, but I also assume that the commissioner has taken into account that he could have imposed the sentence of postponing the sentence on the basis that he would be going to for for drinking. For one or other reason, they decided not to do that. There was also an indication in one of these documents that Mr. Zimbabwe has got this problem of alcohol since 1996. The ball, one can also argue that the ball was in his court to rehabilitate himself since 1996, which he apparently hasn't done, or which he has done, but he has relapsed again. If this committee would, I don't see any possibility in the act that Parliament can decide to refer it back for further investigation. It must take a decision. What one would probably do is to establish what the current position is, because Mr. Zimbabwe was. The hearing took place in 2007. Things could have changed in the meantime. He could have rehabilitated himself, and he may be a very valuable member of society in the meantime. I don't know. But that's all that I want to say.
Thank you,
Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Chair. With regard to the last question, the signing officer was informed by the office of meeting general on the 27th of June that Mr. Zimbabwe has been admitted to the institution. But he could not give any particulars about the institution and exactly what happened, because the attorney also didn't reveal that to the office of meeting general. But the signing officer was aware of that. Chair, I can only read from the judgment of a deciding officer, not the judgment, the recommendation regarding the division of sanctions. Concerning the matter of not coming to court, or not obtaining the client leave before coming to court, or not obtaining the office hours. Is whether it is unexpected absence from office on the part of the magistrate, other magistrates to take the word up. This results in a dispute of prejudice in the trial of any cases and bail application cannot proceed. This in turn more often than not leads to increased legal costs accused witnesses are then called without being testifying. Accused remaining in prison for longer than is necessary in the figures of the administration of justice as a whole. He goes on to say, magistrates, public officers occupy one of the highest offices with great powers and responsibilities for which other people's lives. Magistrates are expected to conduct themselves in a certain manner which is not expected of many other people's professions. Magistrates are expected to set an example as well modeled in society to be of a high integrity. The interest of the community must also be respected. The community expects from them to impose an appropriate sanction or that within the temple. To the resolution to make a recommendation. He took the previous conditions into account, and also the commission to take into account. I won't say that the commission overemphasized. I mean, this is serious. He doesn't pick up for work. Then a court has to be combined, or dollars to be combined. The starting officer was not aware of the fact that he had an alcohol problem when he admitted that was actually put on record in the 14th of June. They would have submitted a social worker report, which the commission had not up to date for the commission could be doing solicitation statements from the community that he had an alcohol problem. Social workers to finalize the report, that an order of the court can be made according to the rehabilitation. We may say the client has medical problems, he then resorts to alcohol with the section 1906. Having had two previous convictions in the last conviction of four counts of misconduct, the commission doesn't agree with that period, and he's not subject to Yeah, send letters to the mayor. No, why not say to the mayor? Well, say the police. I thought you must have the committee. Whenever they are serving to the city, I don't the committee. No, everything has the old what happened. I think it's here from the side of parliament that I don't think it's the other member here who is saying we have to condone people who are irresponsible. People don't expect that when you come to court, they are coming to present. But people are affected. And we are clear that we are not going to give praise to people who are acting irresponsibly to the society in the public. Occupying such a senior office in the country. We are of the view that there's no way you can be men. At this level, you don't worship this kind of behavior from our judicial office. I think from all the members here, there's no one who says, not say that way. Let's be better than that. Not even one member. The only concern by members is the process. Because on the very last leg where one has to stand and say, no, my Lord, I plead mitigation and give all I want to give to the presiding officer. That was not done. And members have the feeling that maybe if that member is allowed to plead for mitigation, they might have arrived at a different conclusion. I'm not confident that that was not mitigation, but there's a possibility that if this man has been allowed to do this, maybe the different possibility would have been arrived. Now, I don't think colleagues were under pressure for this. What I'll say is that I want to conclude this thing. To either one, give us a chance to consult further. Or, option two, is to request that this man be allowed to put his case on. Now, the question is whether to the committee, I think if we said this matter must be given a hearing again, who is supposed to hear it? I'm not saying that's what I was deciding now, but I'm just saying if one decides to let this man be heard. Because I remember when we were dealing with the advocate Majolo, the committee took it upon themselves to write to Mr. Majolo. To say, Mr. Majolo, we're told that they are writing correspondence to you and any time to have your correspondence. As this committee, only the committee said that, can you talk to me to say, what is your view on this? And I gave him about 14 days. They went to the testimony, they did the lesson, and they do the point. It was after that scene where we said, no, this man, even in Parliament, we tried to babysit him, but they said no. He said we must go. In this case, can I be advised that if we want to give this man a chance, just specify ourselves in Parliament to say, that last leg, I want to be clear to the department. We're not saying this man has done right. He has wronged the society. He has wronged the department. He has wronged Parliament. But that last leg where we were supposed to plead for mitigation, that's the only leg where we think we were supposed to be given a chance. If one that should be determined to be verified, that is, where must we send this letter to contact the correspondent or the message?
Yeah, I think one way to it, either one of two ways. One will send it directly to him, or one will send it to I just said the place where he's staying to make sure that the sheets, London's got the sheets.
So, I mean, if one wants to remove the matter from us now, temporarily, to say, no, want to hear is that last leg. For him to present himself, I don't know where can it go.
I think the commission would have to deal with it itself, because you can't be referring back to the commission, because the commission is also knowing if this truth is a figure. So this is the only remaining body, basically, that can do that, as far as I can see. I think you would be able to ask Mr. for example, to establish what the current position is, also from not only from a boundaries point of view, but also from a medical point of view, to establish what his position is. As you know, rehabilitated, is he now a rehabilitated person? And I think we can do that.
Yeah,
Mr. Mayor?
No, I wanted to
ask
the
question.
Yeah, we can ask the attorney to give us a special service report. We had his recommendation of it, but we can, if you want us to serve a letter on you, or to get a letter to the
community. Yeah, I'll say where we send the letter, we send a letter to him, to hear his own view, because I think the commission considered the letter from the attorney, but they were not convinced about it. So I want to avoid that route. I want to give this person direction. You have to hear me, but make a presentation through the board, and that will be fine. But I think let's give this, this last chance just to hear your side of the truth. That's whether his health condition is in any rehab, that he recovered, or certainly now, but the department has to also verify this information. Because you know what I'm saying. Before you call me to finance the letter. Now, how much time can we give 14 days? 21 days? How long can we give this? How long can we wait this letter? Let's go 14 days and see the mayor if can assist in crafting that letter. If I can help, I don't know why I can help, but I can help it. That's good. But we'll send it straight away. Thank you, colleague. I've read through Mr. Chauke's whatever. It looks as a very simple and short one. The Chauke's case.
I just want to. I'm not sure if he's going to
come in and present himself yet. No. He's inviting him. And you are saying that to lie in Parliament is still a content. They might have to be a fair attack. I just put it as the truth and nothing else. Yeah, I think we're going to leave the matter in there. As I said, I read Mr. Chauke's case where
a men's society happens to come from my area, that the whole project is one of my guys who are supposed to be in the house. They had some very good I'm doing this to allow this man to finish whatever I want. I want to catch everything, but only by the next I have a letter to this. So in order before we break for lunch, because I know that this healthy tape won't take us long. Who don't talk to this?
Mr. Chair, just to give you a brief background, just to refresh your mind. Mr. Chalky was charged in the original court in Pretoria during September 2004 of stealing containers from laboratories in Midrand. The containers were later discovered by the police at his house, at his residence in Centurion, and he was connected to his fingerprints.
That's
certainly your case, no? We recarry society. Come on, as a result of the criminal charges, he was provisionally suspended from office. The minister decided the provisional suspension on 13 December 2005. And it was subsequently endorsed by the House and by both Houses of Parliament. The Commission on 7 November commenced with this inquiry, and a written notice was served on him to indicate the commencement of the inquiry at the time. But it was decided to postpone the matter pending the finalization of the criminal proceedings. And in 2007 November, he was convicted in the Specialized Commercial Crime Court in Pretoria, and he was of receiving of stolen property. He, together with his wife and his son. Then a week later, he was sentenced to 12 months imprisonment, suspended for 5 years. Then in December 2007. On the recommendation of the Commission, the Commission has decided to withhold his salary. That was after his conviction and after his sentence. The Minister submitted that report to Parliament in December 2007, and that is what's now before the Committee for Consideration. Now, what happened in the meantime is that Mr. Chauke approached the High Court in Pretoria to set aside his provisional suspension. Now, we've very recently, at the end of last week, received the judgment. But it boils down to the fact that the court set aside his provisional suspension on the basis that the Commission did not comply with the provisions of the Act, in the sense that, well, the Act says that the Commission should start the proceedings by serving a written notice on Mr. Chauke. And if that is not done within 60 days after suspension, the suspension lapses. Now, the court found that the Commission, although it served a written notice on Mr. Chauke, did not comply with the Act as the court sees it. For that reason, the court came to the conclusion that the suspension lapsed. And as a result of that, of course, obviously the withholding of his salary should also fall away because that's dependent on suspension. So that is the situation. We will still submit a report. We've got to receive the judgment. We'll still submit a report to this committee now, basically withdrawing that previous report to just get it off the books of the. But that is the situation. It's basically for the committee to take notice of the officers. Thank you.
Thank you very much,
Dr.
Patrick. I think here, what's happening here is that the gentleman will continue getting his salary now. And this has finished last, but the restatement is the one that was read. He has reinstated in terms of the judgment. But him being reinstated, what is he saying here?
hereby declare that the provisional suspension that the decision for the reinstatement of the applicant is hereby refused.
This is the man, you remember that one of the other charges that he was downloading pornography material in his office, watching pornography in the office while you were supposed to be in the court. Yeah, it was on page 3, you know, for the judgment.
What is in the mere about the judgment and the order that the court gave is the issue that he should not be reinstated. Now the only basis that he abused is the fact that it was suspended. Now the suspension lapsed, so automatically he should come back.
Yeah.
So I don't know what basis he's now appealed. I don't know. There's no basis for him to be appealed. But the court still says that he should not be reinstated. So I don't know. One will have to reach the judgment properly and decide what to do.
Anyway, I was for you, just to update us on this thing, what's happening. We took a decision about this man. So they will come back to us again about the data development. But the matter is now first there with the provision again. Really, it's finalized, I think they'll come back to us again, normally. That's why I'm for this. But this court wants to comment about it again.
Yeah, please give me back the story.
On that note, there is a circular from the office of the House Chair that states that all sitting lines in Parliament have been investigated and I said discontinued or suspended. All our committees must have is a single line from now on. What is it? And some federal office, there's a safety right here written by Madame Oliver. So those of us who I have a strong views about the single line to attack this kind of things in Parliament. People Parliament. Now, for the one looking again to tomorrow to continue our discussion at the at Quality Room 5, 9, tomorrow. Oh yeah, there is this repeal of legal session at the department, the dates are meeting us. The department is asking for attention again, but we'll talk about it tomorrow. It's a formal table before us. It's a deal that goes to pass again. That's where I tell you this. I'm not going to speak about it in the future. But let's enjoy our sunset single life for you.
Romano, 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 Rom